Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
So, Clay, I really want to talk about this Monday Night Football game first because it was such a barn burner. I think we were watching one of the most iconic sporting events of all time. It was riveting from start to finish. This is the kind of moment that makes you absolutely love sports, love competition, and love the drive from both of these football teams. What an effort by the New York Jets.
Man, I was so disappointed. I was excited to watch this game, and I was hoping to myself, hey, maybe there'll be something to discuss here other than the fact that the Patriots are still really good at football after 15 years of what seems like endless domination. And instead, I sat and I watched this game, and I thought to myself, the AFC is done, right? Like, whoever you're a fan of in the AFC, it can be the Ravens. It can be the Texans. It can be the Chiefs. You ain't beating the Patriots in New England, and it doesn't matter how good you actually are at football. It's like we basically have a line of demarcation here. The Patriots, assuming that Tom Brady stays healthy, and frankly, I don't even know that that matters with this defense, and we'll get to it in a moment. They're on one side of the Super Bowl, and on the other side, there's a lot of debate about who's good in the NFC, but it's not actually going to impact the AFC side of the equation at all. I wanted there to be a new storyline, and instead, we've got the same one we've had for 15 years. The Patriots are the best. They are the standard, and no one can equal them. And maybe you can sit around and argue about Sam Darnold and whether this was legitimately, and I know we live in a hyperbolic society, but legitimately, I think you can argue this might have been the worst Monday Night Football performance nearly of all time, if you actually look at it by the numbers. And I don't know about you, but I am so ready for there to be a new storyline, and the king ain't dead. The Patriots are going to be in the Super Bowl in Miami. The question is, who is going to be trying to beat them?
Yeah, look, and Tom Brady wasn't even that great last night.
That's the thing that's so tough about it, is Brady's finally declining, but the Patriot defense is so good that I feel as if there are legitimately 15 or 20 quarterbacks that could be able to handle what the Patriots are providing on the defensive side of the ball. And I've got a stat for you here. Defense through 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
If I told you right now, what are the most iconic defenses that you've ever heard of in the history of the NFL, you'd probably point to the 85 Bears, and you'd probably point to the 2007 Ravens. Let me give you some stats here. The 85 Bears, the Jim McMahon Super Bowl Shuffle Bears that for many of our listeners right now are an iconically dominant defense, gave up through 7 games 315.5 yards per game. The 2000 Ravens, Ray Lewis, they won a Super Bowl title despite the fact that their team didn't score on offense a touchdown for a month. That's the Trent Dilfer Ravens. They gave up just shy of 260 yards a game. The 2019 Patriots are averaging less than 224 yards per game. They aren't just good. They are statistically dominating the 85 Bears and the 2000 Ravens through 7 games. It's off the charts level dominance.
Yeah, it is. And Darnold, you talked about his night. I really like Sam Darnold, and it's really hard to say that today because he goes 11 for 32 for 86 yards, 4 touchdowns, and has a 3.7 passer rating.
4 touchdowns, you just said.
Four interceptions. I'm sorry. Whoa. I was a little bit off on what I was saying. Yeah, like, The argument against this Patriots stat that you just said, and there's a lot of them, first of all. Like, there are some DVOA stats that have them in the top 10 football teams of all time across the board. There are things that they have done where they are one of the six best defenses statistically ever to play across the board. And then you look at who they've played, and that's always what people try to put out here. The problem is, that's a bad argument simply because they can only play who's on their schedule. Yeah, their schedule is cake. They played at Miami. They've played the Jets twice. They played Washington. They played the New York Giants without their top two wide receivers or Saquon Barkley. They played the Steelers in that week one debacle where we all of a sudden realized maybe Pittsburgh stinks. And then they've played Buffalo. And they barely beat Buffalo, who also has a really good defense. But I don't look at it that way. I just look at it and say, this is the best defense Bill Belichick has ever had, bar none. Stats air that out. And the fact of the matter is, they don't need their offense anymore to win not just the AFC, but I think maybe the Super Bowl, quite frankly. Like, they're not going to see a great quarterback. Like, you look at the quarterbacks they've seen this year, Clay, it hasn't been that great. And they're really not going to see a superb quarterback until December, honestly, because what's coming up for them next is Baker Mayfield and then Lamar Jackson, which, I mean, well, maybe that turns into something. Carson Wentz, the Eagles secondary is a disaster. Dak Prescott, he's up and down. And then you get Deshaun Watson, who I really like, and then you probably get Patrick Mahomes, who will be back in the lineup by that point. Those two might challenge this defense, but right now they're on a completely different level. They've made the AFC almost unwatchable, unless you just want to watch exhibitions, unless they're playing. I agree with you. You wanted a different storyline. I was talking to my wife last night asking about this, and she hates them too, and I said, I realize I'd love to hate them. If they weren't here, I don't know what I would be talking about. I love to watch them get beat, and I think that might be the ultimate sign of respect and excellence that I will tune in hoping to see them get upset. Do you know they haven't lost a game in January in Foxborough since 2009? I mean, the stats about the Patriots are absolutely bonkers. Belichick, Brady, doesn't matter who gets the credit. They are so far and beyond every other franchise in the league that it's embarrassing.
All of those things are true, and the response that I would give to anybody who says, oh, the Patriots haven't played anybody, is, hello, they're the Patriots.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to argue, hey, the Baltimore Ravens, they haven't really played anybody. If you want to argue the San Francisco 49ers, hey, they haven't really played anybody. I'm not necessarily going to buy in because it's the NFL and there's not much of a distinction between the best and the worst team in the NFL. So it's not as if we're talking about college football where you point to the overall talent level and there's this massive dichotomy. The problem with that argument of the Patriots haven't played anybody is, have you been watching football for the last 20 years? The Patriots have dominated everybody, no matter what level of skill they might bring to bear in the equation. So, yes, I understand the argument of the Patriots have played a weak schedule, but the Patriots are also the greatest dynasty that we have ever seen in the history of professional football. And so I'm willing to give them a pass when they have beaten everybody other than the Buffalo Bills by 16 points or more. I don't see any way, based on the history that we have experienced with this franchise, with Bill Belichick, with Tom Brady, with everything that they bring to bear in this equation, that anyone is going to show up in Foxborough in January and beat them this year. They're going, unless Brady gets hurt, they're going to be in the Super Bowl, and the question is, which NFC team is going to be playing against them? Because as is, I just have zero doubt about this franchise. Now, it's the year of the backup quarterback. So if Tom Brady gets hurt, maybe we could have that equation. But right now, Jason Martin, I don't see any point in having that conversation at all.
Me either. And one other thing I was thinking about during your last response there was that the Patriots have been so good and so dominant for so long that they have turned a whole lot of somebodies into nobodies. And then you can say they haven't played anybody. That's because nobody's on their level. There are so few franchises that qualify as somebody when they're staring across the line at the New England Patriots. They've been so good, they've blanked out mediocrity, and they've turned you into either, okay, you're one of the three or four teams that maybe could beat them, or you're just on a refuse pile with absolutely no chance.
Well, not only that, I mean, there was a lot of optimism, and I'll put myself in this camp about Sam Darnold. Comes back from mono. If you're going to make the bullish case for the Jets, you could point to the 16-0 lead against the Bills and argue, hey, Mosley's out. He's coming back. We're going to have a lot more success. We're not going to give up a 16-point lead. You just saw what happened with Sam Darnold against the Cowboys last week. Boom, we can get on a roll, and Sam Darnold has changed everything. This was one of, Jason Martin, the worst performances that we have ever seen from a quarterback in Monday Night Football history. Five turnovers, less than 100 yards passing. I understand that there have been a ton of, and hopefully for Jets fans will be, a ton of better moments for Sam Darnold.
It ain't gonna
get worse.
But
on this stage, at this point, when he's talking about seeing ghosts on the mic on Monday Night Football, this is as bad as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, it's atrocious. I was trying to look at some others. Josh Freeman had a really bad game in his debut for the Minnesota Vikings a couple of years back. He had a negative 11.3 overall grade from Pro Football Focus, 20 of 53, though, for 190 and no touchdowns with one interception. And that was rated as maybe the worst performance ever. This might have been worse. I mean, just looking at it from every metric. I mean, and look, he wasn't getting a ton of protection, but even when he had guys down the field, he was overthrowing them. Like, I hated this because I'm a Sam Darnold fan, and I still believe in Sam Darnold, but I watched this, and I'm like, this is the kind of performance that if he's not mentally tough, he's going to have a hard time shaking this one off, especially in that market with those fans who never forget anything and expect you to suck just because you play for their franchise. Jets fans have to be on that list of futility, Clay. We've done this on the show before. Maybe that's something to put a pin in and do another time. Just looking at fan bases that are tortured in terms of just franchises, not cities. We've done cities, but franchises, and the Jets have to be on that list. But this was about as low as it gets. This was almost butt fumble level.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right, because Sam Darnold has mostly, I know people had their fun with the mono issue and the fact that he was missing games, but he's mostly, we've talked about this, been the anti-Baker Mayfield. He hasn't given the media much to really kind of revel in, and I feel like this game, this performance, this point in time, this changes everything. And certainly sitting as bad as the Jets have been coming into this game, Darnold, you could at least argue it's hard to judge him very much, but he was so bad in this game. And Bill Belichick confused him to such an extent, it's hard to believe that he's going to get passes going forward.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very difficult. But what's not going to be difficult is to pick New England to win a lot of football games. Their schedule is going to get tougher, but still, it's New England, and they're on a completely different level.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
All right, Rachel Bonetta. First of all, I am back in L.A. Later tonight, I'm going to go watch Clippers-Lakers.
What? Are you for real?
No, I am for real. Going
to
the game.
And
I am going. Well, I am going to the game. I didn't get the tickets.
Oh, my.
Somebody else got the tickets for me.
Uh-huh.
So, in the grand scheme of things, right? L.A. is now the center of the basketball universe.
I suppose.
Your boy Kawhi is now in L.A. Interestingly enough, he, much like you, fled Canada for the better country of the United States and then went all the way to the West Coast where it doesn't snow.
Yeah.
Where the weather is absolutely perfect.
Pretty nice. Today.
So don't you feel like a total hypocrite that you were upset at Kawhi for doing the same thing that you did?
Listen, people in Toronto and Canada didn't love me as much as they loved and appreciated
Kawhi. I'm not talking about people in your countrymen and women. I'm talking about you yourself. You basically paved the pathway for Kawhi.
I am not a hypocrite. I did not pave any path. It is two completely different situations. I'm still disappointed that he left. But to be honest, I am super excited to watch him here in L.A. because I feel like there is no, if you are living in Canada and you are mad at that man, you need to get a life, because he gave us our championship. That's maybe not going to happen again for a really long time. And so there is no hard feelings. In no way did I pave the way for him to come here.
I think
that is rude and blasphemous.
I think, honestly, if I were going into the locker room to talk after this game and Kawhi were speaking, I would say to him, Kawhi, I can't believe that you followed Rachel Bonetta's lead and just spurned all of Canada for the sun and the fun of LA. At least he's from Southern California. You're a native Canadian.
Okay. I have nothing to do with this. There's so
many factors. How long is your green card good for, by the way?
I don't have my green card.
Is that, are you able to be on?
If you're listening to this, please give me one.
Are you allowed to be on? Like, so I don't know how that process works.
I'm in the midst of getting it. It takes
is it
a lot
complicated?
Longer than people think. Oh my God, I had to get everybody and their mother.
Do you
to
get
write
one? Like, do you get the green card for like exceptional talent?
Yeah, I think so. I don't even
know. I don't even know how the green card works.
Like, you have to have your visa. So I had to get a visa when I came over here. My first visa got declined twice.
For what reason?
For, I don't even know. They just thought that I wasn't. Because basically when you get your first visa, you have to convince people that you are better for this role.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking of. The visa more than the green card.
Yeah,
yes.
So then once you have your visa for like X amount of years, then you can apply for your green card. But you're still proving that. You're still proving like she is better for this role than anybody in America, which sounds outrageous.
So like if you had like the Todd Furman start to gambling under your visa,
they'd be like, no, you're clearly not allowed
to be on television anymore. So you have to get that process taken care of. Now, speaking of the show, tomorrow on the show, on Wednesday, I have to do 50 plus push-ups.
There's no chance.
First of all.
I'm taking the under. I'm putting money on it.
I am a supreme athlete, and I understand that my athleticism is roundly ridiculed and condemned by everyone who is either knows me or is listening to this program right now. Mm-hmm. But I'm just telling you, I rolled out of bed this morning in LA and knocked out 61 push-ups on the floor in my hotel room.
Clay, while we were live, this whole thing started when we were in the middle of a show. So you couldn't really work out the details. What was said is now written in stone. And you said perfect.
Well, I think the way this is going to be, there is like the perfect push-up, like the device.
Yeah.
But I think one of our coworkers has come up with the idea. First of all, we're going to do it live on the air.
Yeah.
Which is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, if you screw up once, game over.
Well, no. I mean, I'm going to do like 70, so I'm going to have plenty of barriers.
There's no chance
but
you do
we
70.
Are. I think this is a good idea. We are going to put a noodle underneath me.
Okay.
Right? Like,
so
I mean,
you have to touch your chest.
You have to see the, because you can see the noodle move.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, so you and other people who feel the need to, like, be sticklers can literally put your heads on the ground of the Fox Studios and confirm when my prodigiously strong chest hits that noodle that it's happening every time.
At what point do you think you're going to start getting stressed out? Like, is it 30? Is it 20? Is it, like, at what point are you going to start being like, oh, crap?
Here's what I'm a little bit concerned about. The only thing, I know I can do the push-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Breath. Because, like, keeping your breathing.
And
when
it's
you
gonna
do,
be gonna be, like, hyped up.
Oh, yeah. My adrenaline.
TV.
This is not a joke, all right? I'm not the kind of guy. I'm not the kind of guy to name drop. But I was at a charity event this weekend, and Tim Tebow was there.
Okay.
And so Tebow and I were having a conversation about it, and I swear to God, he said the thing you have to consider here is the adrenaline impact.
Mm.
He said because you're going to come out all gung ho, all hyped up, and it's going to be like a boxer. Like, and I didn't really think about it before, but you ever know, like, the reason why the champ wants to come in the ring last in boxing is because he wants his challenger to have to deal with all the adrenaline going through his body while he stands and waits in that ring, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like it's pouring off your. I mean, I can see how that could be an incredible thing.
The one thing that you have going for you is that you have to do a whole show before we do this. So your mind will somewhat be off of it.
Correct.
And it will only be in that split second that you have to, like, come over and do the push-ups.
Also, that I am, like, supremely excellent at mind control. I mean, there are few people on the planet who have my ability.
What does that even mean?
It means that, like, I think the ability to compartmentalize and focus to the,
like
I don't notice anything else.
Mind.
Yes. I don't notice external noise.
I just don't. Do you work out regularly? Be honest.
Yeah.
Be honest.
I mean, do you think physique happens by accident?
I think yes, maybe. How often do you work out, actually?
I go to CrossFit 3 times a week.
You go to that? What? Wait,
I swear.
What? I have never heard you talk
about that. Yeah, I go for like 5 years. I go to CrossFit 3 days a week. I understand that people might see me shirtless and think, oh, that guy is...
Does not do CrossFit.
Or that guy is fat, or that guy's out of shape. And we had a shirtless video of me because I have perpetually on cameras.
We've all seen deal is.
But the
here.
Thing is, first of all, I have a dad bod, but there's substantial muscle behind underneath my fat.
Yeah.
So, like, offensive linemen, if you see them shirtless, you don't think, like, that guy's a physical specimen, but they're really strong.
Well, I don't know
so
if offensive
pound for pound,
can pound out 70 push-ups.
Right pound for on, some of them probably could.
Maybe.
But I'm going to knock out 70 push-ups. I mean, 50. I have to hit 50 plus one.
So have you been practicing?
Oh, yeah. I just
How
said I rolled out of bed.
Able to do it?
I just did 61 this morning when I rolled out of bed.
Come on. Didn't you say 70 earlier?
No, I said I can do 70. I've been adding 5 a day.
Check the tape.
I've been adding five a day since Joel called me out. The first time that I dropped down, literally we finished the show.
Yeah.
Right that day. And I was like, oh, God, I just put a lot of money on the line here. And I haven't done a lot of series of push-ups in a while.
Well, either way, win or lose, it's going to
charity.
Charity.
We're going to pick the right charity. And honestly, I think this is a cool component of it. Whatever we donate to charity, mm-hmm. and I think there's $1,000 on the line, the number of people who will hear about the charity, and certainly even on this show, we will play it on Thursday, although I'll be flying back from L.A. to get back, but we'll play that. So, like, it'll be well distributed for mm-hmm. the charity. Mm-hmm. They will get a lot more attention than the money that they're going to make.
What happens if you don't achieve this feat? You are going to get torn apart. Not that you don't already on social media. You're going to get torn apart. And we haven't made any ground. There's been no rules made that we can't distract you. Nothing like that.
But see, I don't think, as long as you don't physically touch me, I don't think there's anything that, or throw things. I don't think there's anything you can do to get me psyched out. Like, there's nothing that you, maybe you could make me laugh, but I think I have
the
ability. I think I have, yeah, because then I'd lose my breath. So we need to establish the ground rules that you guys are there. As
It'll
officials.
Just be me, because Sal's in New York.
That's right.
City.
Sal's in New York right now.
That you have on your side.
That's true. But there is a large number of people who are, like, Joel will be there.
Yeah.
Because that's why we're doing it on
I
Wednesday.
I don't think you're doing it. I'm sorry, but I don't think you're going to make it to.
I love that you have. It's going to be great. I love that you have faith in Baker Mayfield and not faith in me.
By the way,
did you do a movie this weekend?
I did, yeah. I shot a little short film.
How long was it?
Oh, I don't know how long it's going to be. We haven't edited it yet, but it's going to be freaky.
Like, how many hours? The scary thing?
Oh,
is it supposed to be out by when?
It'll come out, like, the day before Halloween, but it's fun. I wrote it, and it's got a twist. It'll be, like, 4 minutes.
So how long does it take to make a 4-minute? Like, how many hours did you spend on it this weekend?
We started at 2, and we finished up at 6.
Oh, it's just not that 4 hours.
Yeah, no, it's short. Like, it's just,
I know, but we
like
spent like 14
sketch.
Hours on the Back to the Future skit that
we
did.
Well, I mean, we didn't have like the budget that we had for the Back to the Future sketch. It was shot in my house. But, yeah, I think.
By the way, I meant to mention this too.
Mm-hmm.
What about Mark Schlereth just murdering you last
murdered
night on social
me.
Media?
Absolutely.
And I have
murdered.
To say, I watched that video.
He's good. He's funny.
He is very funny.
Yeah.
And you were trying to catch a football diving onto your bed?
I just wanted to record something. You know, we're always, for me, I'm like very active on social media, especially on Sundays, because that's like the day that we're all talking about football games. So I asked the person who I thought loved me to throw me a catch, and I was going to...
Your boyfriend. I can tell you, he might not love you because he hasn't proposed yet.
My boyfriend, to throw me the ball, I was going to catch it in slow-mo and post something like, happy Sunday, we're all balling out. And he threw it, like, towards the bed. I went up high, he went low.
I have to say, in Schlereth's defense, you didn't really react. I don't know about your ball skills. Because
I'm not a football
you did,
player.
Yeah, but if the ball is going one direction and you're going in a different direction, the goal should be to react to the ball,
no,
right?
I said, loved one, if you want to make me look good, just put the ball into my hands. He was a quarterback in like high school.
Was he really?
Couldn't do it, yeah. Not anymore.
By the way, Do you become an American if you get married? You don't have to get a visa or a green card anymore, right?
Yeah, that's like the easy way to do it.
And he's an American, right?
He's an American, yeah.
So really, he's...
No, I'm not doing that. I'm not getting married for a green card.
Why you wouldn't just lie.
Also, you just put it out onto the radio. The government officials could be listening.
Well, you live together already. It's not like you're just randomly picking a dude at the LA bus terminal.
No, I want to do it on my own. Even if we were to get married, I'd still be like, I am getting the green card on my own.
But it doesn't make any sense then, because you're already set and everything's good.
Also, can I tell you a little bit of a spicy story?
Yeah, of course.
For your green card, you have to literally tell them every single thing that you've done in your life. If you've ever got in trouble,
yeah.
If you've ever, like, literally good and bad.
And you have a rap sheet that's like a long list.
So I made a boo-boo when I was like 17 years old, and I got caught, like everybody else in their life has done, I got caught shoplifting.
What did you shoplift?
I stole some perfume.
From like a department store in Canada?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What kind of perfume was it?
It was a Hollister perfume.
That's somehow. I don't know what I expected the answer. You couldn't have gone for Woods from Abercrombie & Fitch. At least that was the high end. You stole perfume from Hollister?
I had to disclose all of the...
What does it cost? Like $18?
It was $30. It was so broke. Oh my God, it was 17. You think I had $30 lying around?
You think that the Hollister perfume was going to change your life?
I don't know, but anyways.
So you just put it in your pocket?
I was with, and it's so dark in there. I was just like, oh my God, this can be easy peasy.
You've
never shoplifted anything
before? No, I never have.
I'm telling
you 100% the truth. Actually, I take it back.
There we go.
When I was 12, we stole a Playboy.
There you go.
Back in the day, you're younger than I am.
But tell the green card, the government that you
stole. I think they would be like, yeah, so do we. Every single person who's my age and is 12 has stolen a Playboy magazine or a pornographic. I don't even think they make pornographic magazines anymore, but back in the day they did. So what happened to you? Did they take you out in cuffs?
Oh, they were such jerks about it. I was so young and such a baby. I was crying immediately. They put me in handcuffs in the back of Hollister, and I had to sit there and just, like, wait. And they just, like, tried to scare the crap out of me. And you know what? It worked, and I am a perfect gem of a human now.
But you had to put that on your green card.
I had to tell them literally everything.
Frankly, I don't know that we should let you in the country, I'll be honest.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We're putting a bow on the most recent weekend in the NFL. And in particular, as part of that discussion, week 7 officially done. There are new updated odds on who the MVP may be for the NFL season. Some of these names I'm going to hit you with, and you're going to be like, yeah, I can kind of see this. Otherwise, maybe not. But I have right now in front of me the 6 top contenders as we near the halfway point. And probably next week after week 8, maybe we'll wait till after week 9 because some teams have bye weeks. We'll come in and we'll actually do an around-the-horn-style discussion of who should be the MVP, make our case for why the MVP should be who it is. But right now, I think it's really pretty intriguing to break down the overall landscape of the NFL, and in particular, look at the top 3 on this board, which I 100% disagree with, honestly. And let me explain why. Right now, I believe there are 3 quarterbacks in the NFL who are transcendent and unbelievable playmakers at their position. And I think they are by far the best in the NFL. Now, you can argue with me about a week-to-week performance. You might even be able to argue with me about a month-to-month performance. But right now, there are 3 guys, and I'll go ahead and put a 4th in because he's probably the greatest that's ever played quarterback, that if you told me right now, Clay Travis, your life is on the line, you have to pick a quarterback to helm the team. If they lose, you die. If they win, you get to continue to live, right? This is the life or death stakes of the NFL. Who would you draft and why as the quarterback to win a game with your life on the line? And if you're too nervous about putting your life on the line, let's pretend it's every spare dollar that you have right now to your name. And if you got no money to your name, it's going to put you $1 million in debt if you lose, and you'll never climb out of it for the rest of your life. Who would you pick? It is my contention that if you pick anyone other than the 4 guys I'm about to name for you, you are an imbecile. All right? Here are those 4, and then I'll tell you who I would pick. I believe There are three guys with arm talent right now in the NFL that nobody else can equal, and an ability to read defenses and see the field and make plays that no one else can make. Those three, in no particular order, are Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, and Russell Wilson. If you've watched them play this year, and I know Mahomes is down with an injury right now, but if you have watched them play this year, all three of those guys will make plays that are so amazing, you will go back and watch the replay, and you won't even see the open guy that they are throwing to. That's how good they are. It's one thing when you go back in the replay and you see what's going on and you say, oh yeah, that guy came wide open. Oh yeah, that defensive back fell down. Oh, they got a pick play ran there. The design of the play was brilliant. I can see exactly what happened. Those things happen when you go back and watch film. Or you'll see an interception thrown, you'll be like, what in the world happened there? Obviously, there was miscommunication in terms of the way that the play was being run. But there are three guys every single week that all three of these guys make at least one completion that if you go back and watch it in super slow-mo on instant replay, you'll be like, I can't believe that he saw that player and that he tried to make that throw. And people were upset last week with Aaron Rodgers when the calls were missed on hands to the face, and as a result, the Lions ended up losing that game. But what wasn't discussed enough was the dime that Aaron Rodgers dropped in to make that a one-score game, right? To basically tie the game up. I mean, it was an unbelievable throw from Aaron Rodgers. It wasn't just that they missed calls in favor of the Packers. It was also that they missed calls in favor of the Packers. And oh, by the way, then you've got Aaron Rodgers who can make throws that nobody else in the league can make, hardly. If you saw the Tyler Lockett touchdown catch thrown on Thursday Night Football in the game between the Rams and the Seahawks, you know what I'm talking about there too. Even in instant replay, it didn't appear there was any area for Russell Wilson to be throwing the ball for Tyler Lockett to be able to catch it. And Patrick Mahomes has had many viral moments of passes, whether it's the no-look throw, whether it's just the unbelievable arm talent that he has. These guys are the quintessential best passers in the NFL. And I don't even think that there is a close second to them. Like, the next tier is a big drop-off. But there's another guy who has been in the league for so long and has seen everything that you can throw at him and has won such incredible levels of success, and that's Tom Brady. All right? Those four quarterbacks are, to me, the four quarterbacks that you would have to have in your risk everything that I own draft to play a football game as quarterback for you, and or your my life is on the line and a quarterback's got to win a game. Who am I taking? Okay? Those four guys are the best at what they do right now in the NFL. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, and Patrick Mahomes. Okay? Regardless, assuming they're healthy, obviously, caveats associated with that. All right? As you break down those four, to me, Tom Brady is great because of his mind at this point more than he's great because of his body. So as great as Tom Brady is, I would eliminate him in my every dollar or my life is on the line draft right now for the quarterback. So I'm eliminating Tom Brady based on his age. And then that leaves me with Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, and also with Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson has won a Super Bowl through an interception late, and another one should have been a win for the Seahawks. Sorry, Seahawks fans, for bringing that up. Patrick Mahomes should have been in the Super Bowl if his defensive end could line up correctly against Tom Brady and that interception doesn't get taken away. And Aaron Rodgers won one Super Bowl. I think right now, the one game to win it all scenario, I am going to go with Aaron Rodgers. All right? And that's maybe a little bit influenced by the fact that he just posted six touchdowns over the weekend, that his Packers are now 6-1. But it's also because, ultimately, I just believe he has the best combination of veteran, I've seen everything guile that you need in order to be a quarterback. And I believe that if you look at the receivers that he's throwing to right now, he doesn't have anybody that's remotely on a high level as a receiver, especially with all the injuries the Packers are dealing with right now. So I would go with Aaron Rodgers that I think is the best quarterback to win a game that I have to win with my life on the line. By the way, I'd want Bill Belichick as the coach or Nick Saban, one of the two of those guys. But that is how I would break it down in a general sense. All of that was prelude to talk about where we are right now with the NFL MVP race. Right now, Russell Wilson, even though he didn't play well against the Ravens this weekend, is the favorite to be your NFL MVP. Coming into that Ravens game, he had a passer rating that has never been equaled or exceeded. It's the highest it's ever been in the history of the NFL if he were to finish the season with that passer rating. Now, obviously, his passer rating came down because he didn't play very well against the Baltimore Raven defense, but it's still a pretty extraordinary accomplishment. He is the favorite right now. Aaron Rodgers is in second place, and I think Aaron Rodgers is going to end up winning this award. I think that Aaron Rodgers felt a little bit of pressure with the new young guns rising, Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, and his seat as the best quarterback in the NFL was questioned. And by the way, it's not just me saying this. Tom Brady said a while back, Aaron Rodgers is the best that does this. He makes throws that I can't make. When you're the greatest quarterback of all time and you are talking about another quarterback and you say that he makes throws that you can't, that's a pretty big endorsement of how good Aaron Rodgers is. Then, look, this guy may one day be there, but he's not there yet, although I love him. Deshaun Watson is right now your number three overall favorite. Now, the Houston Texans are sitting at 4-3. Deshaun Watson hasn't been great every week. I think he has the potential, if he stays healthy, to certainly one day be an MVP, but I don't really think he's in the mix to be the MVP this year, even though he's the third most favorite. Then this guy is just off the charts insane that he is even on this list. Lamar Jackson. All right. Look, Lamar Jackson is the latest in a line of rushing quarterbacks. If they put the word rushing in front of you, you are not going to have a long career in the NFL, by and large. I want you to think about this for a minute. Lamar Jackson so far, and I love this guy. I bet on him a lot at Louisville. I loved what he did in Bobby Petrino's offense. I think he is a fun player to watch. But I've seen this movie before. I have seen Tim Tebow. I have seen Vince Young. I have seen, certainly, RG3. Do you know what people said about those guys who were not consistently able to drop back and pass? All they do is win. Tebow, RG3, and certainly Vince Young. Electric players at the college level. VY should have won the Heisman Trophy. Tim Tebow did win the Heisman Trophy, and so did RG3. All of them came in and took the league by storm early in their career. And there were lots of people out there, I was one of them, in the media and in the fans and in the football industrial complex that fell in love with all three of them. Do you know what happened? Eventually, it came back to what it always comes back to in the NFL. The NFL is a third down and eight passing league. This is an important thing that I return to over and over and over again when it comes to analyzing quarterbacks. In the NFL, in order to become a stud, you have to be capable of dropping back when everybody knows you are going to pass on third and eight, making your reads and progressions, and being accurate enough to continue drives. I'm not talking about making spectacular plays. I'm not talking about being able to throw the ball 100 yards in the air or 60 yards from your knees or hit the goalpost from midfield because your arm is so big and strong. There have been a lot of dudes like that. Kyle Bowler had one of the best arms you've ever seen. Couldn't make it in the NFL. There's a lot of dudes with big arms that could not process information on third and eight when the defense drops back and tries to confuse you and you have to throw for a first down. Who can do it? That's why my four quarterbacks that I ran off on that list, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, all of them can do it. Lamar Jackson can't do it. Now, if you've got a lead, and it's third and two, and he can roll out and he can have a run-pass option, he's almost unstoppable. But you get that man down by two touchdowns, and the Ravens fall apart. Moreover, you cannot consistently run the football as often as Lamar Jackson does in the NFL and stay healthy. Sooner or later, somebody is going to tee off on you, and you are going to get wiped out. And so I've seen this film before. Tim Tebow, Vince Young, RG3, they come in, they take the league by storm, and then we see what happened to Lamar Jackson happen in the postseason. And I think we're going to see it after the bye week, what the Patriots do to him. A really good NFL defense with time to prepare for you embarrasses you. Lamar Jackson was embarrassed for three quarters of the game against the LA Chargers last year. Defensively, they threw him for a loop. They had no answers. Lamar Jackson, frankly, got embarrassed for much of the game against the Cleveland Browns earlier this year. Big win. All credit to the Ravens for getting the win on the road against the Seahawks. But this Ravens team is flawed, and I think the idea that Lamar Jackson is a MVP candidate, that he is the fourth best player in the NFL according to the odds markets right now, is one of the most insane things I have seen in the odds markets in a long time. Lamar Jackson as a quarterback is the most overvalued player right now in the NFL. As a playmaker, he's very good. But as a quarterback, a guy who drops back to pass on third and eight, he ain't there. Now, I'm not saying he's never going to be there, because maybe he can make the step that Vince Young, that Tim Tebow, and that RG3 were unable to take, which is only run occasionally and selectively and become otherwise a pocket passing quarterback. Russell Wilson's kind of mastered that. Doesn't have a great offensive line with the Seahawks. He covers up a lot of their flaws when he drops back to pass. He's mobile. There's nothing wrong with being a mobile quarterback, but you can't be a running quarterback in the NFL. It just doesn't work. And I think ultimately that that's going to be what happens to Lamar Jackson as well, unless he develops into a pocket passing quarterback who can sometimes run. If that happens, then I'll go back and I'll reassess and I'll say, you know what? I have to recalibrate everything that we thought here. The reality is Lamar Jackson is better than I anticipated, but I have significant doubts in the meantime. By the way, the other two guys on this list, Patrick Mahomes, 10-1. I told you he'd be one of my four. And Christian McCaffrey, who is having the greatest year just about for a skill position player that has ever happened before in the history of the NFL. So those are your top six MVP candidates right now as we have completed NFL Week 7. Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, and Christian McCaffrey, all 10-1 or lower.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Petros, I am going to watch Clippers-Lakers tonight. I am in L.A., your town. What should I know? I've never been to Staples Center before.
Well, it's going to be the Clippers floor, right?
Yes.
The Clipper home game. And I think the Clippers are going to wear those sweet jerseys that were on the cover of Sports Illustrated, which are really sweet. It just says Los Angeles in Old English as opposed to L.A. or Clippers. And let's be honest, the Clippers uniforms and their logo absolutely sucks. I mean, sucks. And I think Dan Wojcicki, the L.A. Times writer, made the point that every single Clipper alternate uniform is better than the uniform they wear every day. So they will look a little different. There'll be a lot of Laker fans in the house, because L.A. is a Laker and Dodger town, as I've often told you so many times. And the Clipper fans are a little bit more engaged and exuberant, and it does feel like more of a hometown atmosphere, at least throughout the arena. When you're at a Clipper game, the Clipper fans are a little bit more excitable and traditional. At a Laker game, it's only like that in the upper bowl. Everybody else is just there with Bissell fake boobs trying to be seen.
Then I'll fit in well. What do you think, by the way, before we go back to that? Do you know that, what do you think of my challenge that Joel Klatt and I are betting on? Have you seen this? We're going to do it live on Lock It In on Wednesday. I have bet Joel that I can do 51 push-ups. Which side of the bet would you take? Joel's side on the under, it's actually 50 plus, you know, 50 plus. So 51, I win. under 50, under 50, he wins. 50's a push. Which side would you rather have in this bet?
Well, do I get to ask any questions?
Yeah, you can ask questions before, but you know us both pretty well. I mean, you've seen me shirtless many times over the years.
Yeah.
What questions do you have?
Well, first, when I first saw this in passing, you know, somewhere between Manhattan, Kansas, and Topeka this weekend, I thought that it was Joel you thought could do 51 push-ups. And I was like, oh, Joel can do that and a lot more. So I didn't know it was you doing the push-ups. So now I feel like I understand the bet a little bit better. But at the same time, I don't look at you and think that you can't do athletic things or things that require, you know, a certain modicum of adult strength. So let me ask you, like, how often do you work out, Clay? And when you did do push-ups, if ever in your life, how many did you do?
So I will tell you this. I go to CrossFit about 3 days a week, right? That's my workout now.
All right. You can do it. So, I'm with you. I bet Clay Trav. I'm team sewer cap nipple. I am team Clay Travis.
And so, you know, I woke up in my hotel room in L.A. this morning, and I rolled out of bed, and I did 61. Now, Joel, I think his only hope is to be a push-up stickler, right? So I think what we're going to do is put, you know, like those pool noodles, you know what I'm talking about? You know, like the floaties? Yeah. I think the decision is to put one of those underneath me, and I have to touch that on every rep in order for it to count. Does that make sense? Like, because how low you go on a push-up obviously factors in as well.
Right. I think that's part of it. I think adrenaline. Joel is hoping that adrenaline gets the best of you and you exhaust yourself because you'll be on camera.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, everything we do on air is a little different than how we would do things in real life. I mean, I know, you know me, every other word is the F word in real life for me.
Yes.
So I do things a little bit different on the air, and you do have a certain level of anxiety when you're on the air. So I think that, but I think you're going to be in good shape. Joel will be a rule stickler, and I think it's a really good thing to look forward to worrying about, because Joel is very judgmental about things like this. And I would say get Pereira or Blandino. You know, I'm sure it'll cost.
That's even better.
I'm sure it'll cost the company, you know, a couple thousand dollars to get them. But, you know, that way Joel, because Joel can't cross those guys when he's on the air with those guys, so he's certainly not going to cross them in a push-up contest.
That's actually a brilliant idea, because I don't know if either one of them is actually going to be out here. Does Blandino live in L.A.? I think he might live in L.A., so we might be able to bring him in.
Yeah, he lives here.
Yeah, I know Pereira gets flown in from Northern California or something, right? All right, so we got that contest that's going on. Also, and I don't know how much you guys talked about it, but I know that AM 570 LA Sports, where you host the afternoon show and where we're on right now early in Tuesday morning, is the, I believe, home of the LA Chargers. Did you guys talk, or has there been much discussion about the Chargers in general with the way that game ended?
Well, yeah, we talked about it because my radio partner, Matt Smith, is the voice of the Chargers. So
yes.
He called that game. Like, you were there, so he was there, witness to it all. And I could see why they overturned the calls. The really odd thing that you usually just don't see is for the officials to put their arms up, touchdown twice, basically game over, and to have them pull it back. But when you watch the replay, you can say, well, I can see why they overturned it. And, you know, I don't know why everybody's freaking out so much, other than that they signaled touchdown twice. I'm used to seeing goal line stands at the end of a game. I mean, that's a hard yard to get. There's a reason you have to get all 100 yards, because it's a really hard yard, that last yard, unless you're running in with your hand behind your head like Deion Sanders high-stepping. So the Chargers aren't that good right now. They're certainly very beat up on the season, much like a lot of NFL and college football teams. They probably have a little bit more than their fair share of injuries. But at the same time, you know, they couldn't get a yard. That's how it is, right? I mean, I didn't see a big deal. Why, what did you want me to talk about with it?
No, I just, it's not necessarily the way that the rulings went down, because I do think they probably got the rulings wrong. I mean, correct. I've just never seen a goal line situation that went on that long with that many different reviews, with that many different stoppages. I mean, just like I printed us off because I thought it was so crazy. And I'm looking at this note right now. I mean, on the final series of the play there, they first of all, you thought they scored, right? Like, you thought they scored there,
right?
And then they go to review it and they say no. Yeah,
Austin Eckler with the catch, and he dove in, but the middle of his back did hit the ground, and it did look like the ball was over. But yeah, that took forever, and then you had a
false start penalty.
A false start,
and
yeah,
then you followed that up with
a PI.
Yep.
And then Melvin Gordon, they called another touchdown, but they said he was stopped, and that was first down. So now it's second down. Melvin Gordon, right side, both hands on the ball, but it's away from his body. Fumble forced, recovery, Jarrell Casey, Titans win. Oh, my God. Alert the people at the Bluebird Cafe. The Tennessee Titans win.
That has
How
all
did I
been.
Do?
That's very good, because I'm looking at it right now, and you basically nailed it. Now the question that's left out there is, how many more? Like, what do the Chargers do? They're not going to make the playoffs this year. All right. So at 2-5, I understand there may be some people listening to us like, oh, there's still 9 games left. The Chargers could win them all. Yeah, okay. They're not going to make the playoffs sitting at 2-5. If you look at the rest of their schedule, in my opinion, what do you do about Phillip Rivers? Like, and also, what do you do about the future of the Chargers in L.A.? I feel like this next several months for the Chargers is kind of fascinating, and just in terms of what the franchise does on the next 5 to 10 years. You know, Phillip Rivers is not going to be around for that much longer as a quarterback, but what's the future of this franchise in L.A. in general in your mind?
Well, do you guys want Phillip Rivers?
I think the Titans would take any quarterback they could get at this point. They talked about Phillip Rivers, the Titans, before, but I think, you know, you got Marcus Mariota, you got Ryan Tannehill, and there's not really that much difference between those two dudes. So, but there's obviously a market for a lot of quarterbacks, and I'm kind of curious in general what the Chargers end up electing to do.
I'm just saying, you know, hey, Marcus Mariota, not exactly super persona Grotta McGee out there in Tennessee. Why don't you send him on down to the Chargers, and the Chargers will give you Phillip Rivers, and we'll just call it a day and just act cool about it.
That would be incredible. I don't think Charger fans would be that excited about giving up Phillip Rivers, even at his age self, for a young Marcus Mariota, although I do still think Mariota's got a future. Let's go back, by the way, to this Lakers-Clippers game, which is happening later tonight in L.A. How big of a story do you think this all ongoing L.A. being the center of the basketball universe story will be? And what kind of reception do you think LeBron James will get in the wake of the China story and his comments? Will that filter in any way with the actual season starting now?
I'm not sure if it will filter in much or as much as people thought. I mean, really what I see, whenever you see a LeBron James tweet or Instagram post or a story about him on social media, which is not exactly the gauge of how everybody feels, but you see about 90 I love you LeBron and little crown emojis, and then under that it says, you know, somebody says like, when's the check going to clear from China? You know, so
yes,
it's not exactly deafening. You know, it's not exactly deafening on social media, because, hey, people want to worship their heroes. and just like LeBron bent his knee to the commies, the NBA fans, you know, they're going to worship LeBron in his cathedral, and people are going to love watching him play. He's supposedly feeling a lot better. We'll see when the grind of the season starts. The Lakers have a devastating two-man game that the globe is going to be watching. Obviously, Kawhi Leonard is the reigning finals MVP and champion, and we've seen him be a champion and defy logic over and over again. You win a championship for Canada, hell, you might be able to do it for the LA Clippers. And Paul George is about 10 games away, and Kawhi Leonard is really compelling. And that's interesting, you know, not just because it's the Clippers, just because it's Kawhi Leonard on a really good basketball team with a great front office and a beloved head coach in Doc Rivers. So I think, and it is rightfully so. You know, it's the NBA. Why do we want to communist China? Let's play basketball and at least talk about basketball. I mean, these guys are going to dress like idiots walking into the stadium like all the football players, but at a certain point, they're going to take off their stupid clothes and put on a uniform, and we're going to watch the games and actually, you know, remember why we are sports commentators.
Is it for the Lakers, and I think to a lesser extent the Clippers, even though they got Kawhi and Paul George will eventually be back when he comes back from his injury, is it for the Lakers championship or bust this year? I mean, if they don't win the championship, are Laker fans going to feel like the season is a waste? Or if the Lakers make the playoffs and make a run, is that a successful season?
Well, we've talked about, I mean, it really depends on how the regular season goes, right? Like if one of those guys gets hurt or both of those guys get hurt. But we haven't seen the Lakers win much in six-plus years now. The Lakers haven't made the playoffs in that long, and nobody's lost more games than them, along with the Knicks, in the NBA. So they've been absolutely awful. And LeBron coming last year just added more drama to a situation and not really anything on the win column side. It just made them more of a national story, and their embarrassment was more revealed because LeBron was here. So I'm not really sure, but I think people have championship hopes, and that is all the chatter here in town is championship hopes. And, you know, if they come out and look like a team that's going to win 70 games, yeah, hell yeah, they better win the championship.
Outstanding stuff as always, Petros Papadakis. Appreciate the time, my man.
Yeah, thank you, Clay. Have a great week in L.A. and enjoy the game tonight. Try not to fall asleep on the floor.
Will do. That's Petros Papadakis.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
I am out in L.A. We spent a lot of time talking about the NFL, kind of putting a bow on Week 7 action in the NFL. Tomorrow, we'll start to look towards the future in the NFL universe as we think about Week 8 and as the trade deadline nears in the NFL. But tonight, all eyes are going to be on Los Angeles, where I am broadcasting this week. I am out in L.A., and tonight I am going to be going to the Laker-Clipper game. Now, it's a Clipper home game, but it's officially beginning the NBA season. And we talked a little bit about this at the end of Hour 2, how the cloud has sort of followed the NBA in what should have been kind of a really uplifting and enjoyable offseason, especially crowned by that trip to Asia where the NBA was going to marinate and enjoy all the growth of its brand in Asia. Instead turned into a major international incident after the Houston Rockets GM Daryl Morey sent out that tweet. And then LeBron last week tried to finally issue a statement on it, and he just stumbled all over himself, and it was not a good look for the league at all. And so the question is going to be a good one. Now, first of all, just to have some fun, and I would love to see the reaction, I think it would be incredible if the Clippers played the Chinese national anthem when they introduced LeBron James at Staples Center tonight. They're not going to do it because Adam Silver would probably try to strangle Clippers owner Steve Ballmer to death if he did it because of all the attention it would get. But I do wonder, as the NBA season begins and as the protests in Hong Kong have accelerated over the past couple of weeks, whether the NBA is going to have to deal with their arenas becoming at times forums for people to make political comments in the crowd. Now, the NBA's created this mess for itself by being the quote-unquote woke sports league. But remember last week in both Philadelphia and in Washington, D.C., the NBA had fans showing up in support of Hong Kong. And there's obviously a huge Asian population in L.A. I'm going to be at the arena tonight. But is there going to be any sort of disturbance that has nothing to do with the on-court product at all? I think that's certainly a storyline that is worth following, not just in this week, but in this year for the NBA, given how big of an international incident that story was surrounding LeBron James, surrounding the NBA in general. How are they going to handle that uncertainty? Is, I think, a massive issue for the league going forward. And will it start to, in any way, impinge upon the overall game itself? Let me give you an example. What do the Clippers do if three or four people with a lot of money to spend show up wearing Free Hong Kong shirts and sit courtside at Staples Center? Are the Lakers and the Clippers going to eject those fans for wearing bright Free Hong Kong shirts and sitting on the front row? You might say, well, why does that matter? I don't have any problem with it. But if China is already angry at the NBA and a player goes to dive into the crowd to try to save the basketball and suddenly those Free Hong Kong shirts become visible, is China going to be furious at the NBA for not policing the speech of the NBA fans sitting courtside? I just think this is a potential mess for the NBA and its partners going forward. And all of this was set in motion by the Daryl Morey tweet, but the NBA has fancied itself as a league that embraces politics, that's not just wanting its teams to just put on a game. I grew up in the age of NBA action, it's fantastic, where they try to appeal to everybody. And the idea that NBA players would have had an opinion on George Bush Sr. or Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton or any of those elections is crazy to me. Like, do you remember Magic Johnson ever talking about the Ronald Reagan era during Showtime with the Lakers? I don't. In the Magic Larry Bird years, do you remember those guys really having a strong opinion on Reagan Mondale in 84? How about Bush versus Bush versus, who was the guy who lost to Bush? I can't even remember. 1988, George Bush beat Michael Dukakis. Had to go back in time there for a minute. Do you remember like there being a lot of big Dukakis guys in the NBA back in the day? Of course not. Like, nobody felt the need to engage in political commentary in those years. And as a result, it was really great for the NBA. But you got to be careful. I worry about this stuff, because I think about everything like I'm a judge, right? That's really kind of the way that I think. And a judge, there's a great line, which is tough cases make bad law. And what it means is something might make a lot of sense in individual justice for this individual case, but what you worry about as a judge is setting a precedent. And I think about this all the time when I do my radio show. I want for people, if you went back and you listened to this show 3 years ago, I think just about everything that I say would be consistent, because I'm always trying to think, what precedent am I setting by this argument that I'm making? Much like a judge issues a ruling, and that ruling has to work not just for the case he's ruling on right now. Like, I'm talking about games, or I'm talking about players or coaches. I'm talking about the right now, the here and now. It has to work for that story. But it also has to be consistent logically with other arguments that I've made in the past. Lots of people don't think about this. This is why they become hypocritical, because they don't have the consistency in their thinking and they can't logically remain affirmed to the same principles. And I think that's what Adam Silver has created now. So I'm excited to go watch this game tonight. I think that LA is the center of the basketball universe. When Paul George gets healthy, Kawhi and Paul George against Anthony Davis and LeBron James, incredibly sexy storyline for LA. I'm excited to see it tonight. But I'm also curious whether the NBA has allowed so much of the external noise into the conversation that it's potentially going to impact the overall effectiveness of their brand when they have something really good to sell, whether the external noise, be it China, be it politics, be it off-the-court related issues, is going to detract from the actual on-court product, which I expect to be really good. I'm thrilled to be going to this game tonight. I can't wait to talk about it with you guys on Wednesday when I start off OutKick. Guarantee you it'll be the top point of discussion for us on the show, breaking down everything that we saw that took place in that game.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.